Hello and welcome to the latest subscriber-exclusive episode of the Eye on the Tigers podcast. My name is Eli Hoff, and I'm the Mizzou sports beat writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. A reminder before we get into the show that Eye on the Tigers is now available solely on our website. You can find all of the STL Today podcasts at STLtoday.com/podcasts. Or wherever you found this one, because that worked for you today and will probably work for you again. On today's episode, it is officially the most wonderful time of the year, the week or the weekend, when you can get some great bang for your PTO buck by taking Thursday and Friday off or just watching basketball at work anyway. This is the part where I flex that watching basketball this weekend is my work, and I use that to say that I will be in Wichita all week to cover the Missouri Tigers ride through March. And actually, on Thursday, doubling up on team coverage because they're in our area, Edwardsville, SIU Edwardsville, made the tournament out of the OVC. They're the 16 seed facing Houston. They're also in Wichita. So you'll get a double the coverage from me. We'll see if SIUE can pull off a miracle and beat Houston, who is a title favorite there. But the focus of our show is Mizzou, and Mizzou is going dancing. Number 6 seed, I'm assuming all of you know that by now, but in case that's news to you, then Mizzou, number 6 seed in the NCAA tournament. 30th appearance for the program in the big dance. Mizzou draws number 11 seed Drake. Those two teams will play in Wichita. Tip-off is set for 6:35 p.m. Thursday on True TV. So watch your Impractical Jokers now, because it'll be basketball on this weekend on True TV. Pro tip, find the channel before you need it. Or log into your streaming app, do all that stuff, because you want it to be set when games tip off at 11 a.m. or 11:15 a.m. Thursday morning. You want to be good to go. For today, we're going to do a little scouting exercise on the Drake Bulldogs. I went through and watched some of their previous games this season to give you a sense of what to expect from them, what Mizzou should be expecting, how Mizzou can exploit it, what Mizzou needs to do well. We'll dig into all of that. But first, we're going to kind of outline Mizzou's path here through the bracket. Again, I'm assuming all of you have probably looked at this. There's a good chance you have given thought to your bracket or even filled it out by now. I am using that as my reward for getting my work done today, is that I get to fill out my bracket. So excited for that process. Again, it really is the best time of year. You just, something about looking at a bracket. Oh, it's so fun. So Mizzou, number 11 seed Drake in the first round. We'll talk about that matchup plenty. I won't dwell on it too much here. If Mizzou wins, then on Saturday, it'll get the winner of 3 seed Texas Tech facing 14 seed UNCW or North Carolina Wilmington or UNC Wilmington. I actually don't know what their preferred way to be referred to is. And the expectation is that we won't really need to know that, because the Red Raiders should take care of business against that team on Thursday. So if Mizzou wins, that would be a reunion of Big 12 pals playing in Wichita, Mizzou and Texas Tech. Tech would be the favorite there, of course, as the higher seed. We'll plenty of coverage and maybe even another podcast episode digging specifically into that matchup if it comes together. But certainly, a winnable game, but it would require Mizzou to stage an upset at that point. If Mizzou can make it out of the first week and go to the Sweet 16, that'll be held in San Francisco next week. Mizzou's in the West Regional, so San Francisco is the host site there. The teams that would maybe face in the Sweet 16, you're looking at 2-seed St. John's, Rick Pitino's gentlemen out of the Big East Conference. They are the 2-seed, so they're the most likely Sweet 16 opponent. But Kansas and Arkansas, also in the mix there. They play each other. They're the 7-10 out in Providence, Rhode Island. Mizzou, of course, beat Kansas on its home floor, split this year's series against Arkansas. So there could be a regional connection there. If Mizzou were to make it to the Elite Eight, number 1 seed in the West, Florida, who Mizzou beat in Gainesville and then lost to in the SEC tournament, is the favorite there. And the Gators, this is a kind of an aside, I'm of the belief they are certainly a Final Four contender. I will have them in the Final Four in my bracket. I hope that doesn't make me come off as overly critical of the Missouri Tigers, then I don't have them winning the West. I have Florida winning the West region. And frankly, I think they probably beat Auburn. So I think I'm going to have them go into the title game. But I'm not locking that in yet. Haven't written that down on the bracket yet. Florida's the favorite to make it there. They've got a fairly, I'd say, favorable path. They've got Norfolk State in the first round, which should not be taken lightly, as many of you know. And then UConn, Oklahoma, Memphis, Colorado State, Maryland, Grand Canyon, and in their upper half of the West region. Seems pretty manageable for them. I was very surprised to see Memphis capture a number five seed. And yeah, that's the bracket there. So Mizzou certainly has a path forward if it can take it, especially because the ceiling of this team has not changed. Mizzou has competed with teams that we look at in this bracket and say are Final Four contenders, the likes of Alabama, the likes of Florida, and that. But we've also seen Mizzou lose to teams like Arkansas, which got a 10 seed, lose to a team like Vanderbilt that got a 10 seed, a team like Texas that's an 11 seed in the play-in in the first four over in Dayton. The floor is still there to a point where Mizzou, you know, absolutely needs to be taking Drake seriously. None of the path matters if Mizzou can't take the first step, which is getting past the Drake Bulldogs. So let's dig in to Drake, who Mizzou's facing. The team from one state up north. Drake won the Missouri Valley Conference this year, wrapped that up at Arch Madness over in St. Louis in the Enterprise Center. The Bulldogs have a 30-3 record. Pretty good 30-win ball club over there. The biggest wins on their resume, of course, as an MVC team, not going to have the best wins in the world, but they did beat Vanderbilt on a neutral floor in Kansas State in overtime. They also did beat, as far as high major or power conference teams go, they also beat Miami. But Miami did not have the greatest year. Miami's at 192 on KenPom. Not a good year for the U. So Kansas State and Vanderbilt, the statement wins for Drake. One of the games, I'll spoil this for the scouting report, I went back and watched all of that Vanderbilt game to get a feel for it. We'll talk about that there. They won the MVC tournament by beating Bradley in the championship game, 63-48. Over, like I said, in the Enterprise Center. The three losses that Drake had to Illinois, Chicago, to Murray State, and to Bradley during the regular season came by a total of 13 points. So, you know, they were never blown out. Biggest margin in a loss was 7 points in their loss to Murray State at home. Played a lot of their losses close. And you know, had some close wins, but also some really commanding wins. Had, you know, a 23-point win over Evansville, which is, you know, what they needed to do in that situation. Ben McCollum is the coach there. He is in his first season. He had a pretty lengthy stint at Division II Northwest Missouri State, local connection here, or there. He brought four of his players with him from Northwest Missouri State to Drake, and this was interesting. I'm entirely stealing this anecdote from the ESPN commentary crew in that Vanderbilt game, but this was really interesting. So when Ben McCollum took the Drake job, which he's an Iowa guy, he'd been holding out for that opportunity for that job. He called up a coach who some of you might be familiar with, Josh Schertz, who's now at St. Louis at SLU, but was at Indiana State, and Schertz himself had made the jump from Division II to Indiana State. So McCollum calls up Josh Schertz and just, you know, to ask him for advice on making that kind of jump, which is a significant one. And the thing Josh Schertz, I guess, relayed to Ben McCollum was that he wished he'd brought more of his guys from the D2 level up to D1 with him. Just saying that you know, when he was going through and building his first roster out of the transfer portal, which is what you have to do these days as a new coach, that he wound up, as the season went, thinking, you know, well, these guys actually aren't all that much better than some of my, you know, best D2 guys were. And that there's something to be said for the familiarity and continuity of giving those D2 guys a chance. So Ben McCollum did that. Four players currently on the Drake roster came with him from Northwest Missouri State. It's an almost, if not entirely, turned over roster from last year, which again happens now. But among those four guys who made the jump is guard Bennett Sturtz, who we're going to be talking a whole lot about today. And you are going to see a whole lot of on Thursday when these two teams play. He's the essence of a a guy who shows that that kind of move can work. He went very under-recruited out of high school. Don't think he had any D1 offers, and has now turned himself into an NBA prospect because that happens. It's, you know, the type of player that a given athlete is when they are 17, 18 years old, and even earlier because they get recruited, you know, when they're 14 or whatever. But, you know, the type of prospect or the skill they have then is not necessarily the type of skill they have when they're 21, 22 years old. Bennett Sturts is showing that. His stat line here, pretty good, to say the least. He very rarely, if ever, leaves the floor. I would fully expect him to play all 40 minutes on Thursday. He averages 39.3 per game. So that's, what, 39 minutes and 20 seconds, right? Or 18 seconds, you know, like, to see him play a full game is far from abnormal, especially in the postseason. I expect he'd be out there the whole time. He averages 19.1 points per game, 5.7 assists, 4.4 rebounds, 2.2 steals. He's shooting 49% from the field and 38.6% from three. It's a lot of stats. Of course, a lot of stats from a guy who's on the floor for a whole lot of time. He can do the playmaking piece, the rebounding piece. He's got a shot. He can get inside, outside, all of that. Other players to know: Mitch Mascari is I'd call him the, maybe not the primary, but the best 3-point shooter on Drake's team. He can be the catch and shoot, quick release kind of guy. In the game I watched against Vanderbilt, he had a great day from three there. Had some really deep, even beyond NBA range threes. You know, the kind of the Caleb Grill range, I guess we could say. Certainly has that in his arsenal. He's shooting 41% from three this season on I think fairly decent volume. So he's someone to look out for. And then Cam Manyawu is a pretty good forward at Drake. There, he can be a little bit of the rim protector. One key thing here: Drake is an undersized team, 6'8". Their tallest player, and I believe that is Manyawu, who is 6'8". Yeah, he's 6'8", so he's their tallest player. So he'll tend to fairly often play as their, you know, number five, but they don't expect him to play like a traditional big man. This is, as we've seen some of these undersized teams this year, Vanderbilt actually is one of them. Mizzou, of course, is one of the taller teams when you look at the grand scheme of college basketball. Certainly, you know, we've talked about this. Length is something that Dennis Gates looked to add in the transfer portal and emphasize when building out this team. Other headlines on Drake: they own the title of slowest team in America. If you look on KenPom at adjusted tempo, 364th out of the 364 Division I teams. That also goes for average possession length. So Drake, on average, their possessions take 22 seconds. This is, again, 30-second shot clock and take 22 seconds. And that's the average, right? So that's going to include, you know, transition possessions that even at their slowest, right, you know, tend to be pretty quick, plus, you know, half court, bring it out from under the basket. Possessions there, they take their time. We'll get into what they do with that time. It's not like they just you know, dribble around until there's 10 seconds left and then say, all right, it's time to try. There is a methodical nature to this Drake team, and they tend to slow games down defensively as well. 18.2 average possession length defensively, which is 309th. So, you know, they tend to bog other teams down as well. Now, for reference here, so again, 22 seconds average possession. Mizzou, for reference, is 55th in pace at 16.5 for its average pace. So that's a 5.5 second difference on average per possession between Mizzou and Drake. That shows you, you know, that is a striking differential between two opponents there. Drake is also a very good offensive rebounding team. They are 17th in the country in offensive rebounding rate. They grab 36% of available rebounds. So, you know, more than a third of available offensive rebounds the Bulldogs haul in. They're a very good defensive rebounding team as well. They do well on the boards. Even though they're undersized, they are very good at getting to the free throw line, 11th in free throw rate, which is not how well you shoot free throws, but how often you get to the free throw line compared to how many shots you take. Of course, Mizzou also very good in that area as well. So this is two teams that do rely on and tend to excel at getting to the free throw line. Drake also defensively Very good here. They have the best steal rate of anyone in the country. 14.6% of defensive possessions lead to a Drake steal. So, the scouting. Watch the like I said, the Vanderbilt game. That was a key part of their resume. That one happened to be in the non-conference. It was a Feast Week tournament over in Charleston, South Carolina. So took a look at that one. And then also watched a good chunk of the MVC championship game against Bradley. And I came away with the big picture thought here. This part is not very tactical, but we'll get into to some of the nitty-gritty. And that's that Drake's system is largely just to challenge the other team not to make mistakes and then magnify the ones that that team does make. So we can look at this from a possession standpoint of kind of how this works or what the underlying theory is. So limiting possessions magnifies mistakes in a game. And Drake, again, with this pace component or lack thereof, I guess, of pace, they magnify possessions because they make there be fewer possessions in a given game. A turnover, for example, right? If you dribble the ball down the floor and pass it right to the other team, that's less significant, one turnover in a 75 possession game, because you've got more possessions to make up for that than it is in a 60 possession game, right? One turnover in a 60 possession game is a lot worse for you than in a 75 possession game, right? And the same 10 turnovers is worse than 60, right? All these things are magnified. A missed shot is more costly because, you know, you are going to have fewer field goal attempts in a 60 possession game, right? Fouling on the defensive end, right? You know, bailing the other team out, giving them an opportunity that they might not have otherwise had means more in a 60 possession game. Everything means more with less possessions, or fewer possessions is the grammar, but more and less sounds cooler there. So let's dig into the math a little bit here. Kendall Palm, which again really digs into the tempo component of this, projects there to be 61 possessions in Thursday's game between Missouri and Drake. That would, if 61 is actually what it ends up being, that would tie for the fewest in a Mizzou game this season. So right off the bat, this could be the slowest or fewest possessions that Mizzou sees in a game this season. And that would be right about average for Drake. So that shows you what the difference is. I put out a kind of homemade, I made it in Excel, a graphic on Twitter you can find that shows the distribution of these teams and their possessions and where they've won and lost. And yeah, 61, Drake actually has a very nice little bell curve with their possessions that, you know, right around 59 to 61 is, you know, right around the middle for them. And from a zoo, 61 looks like an outlier. It's that steep. So again, you know, maybe it ends up being 65 possessions or something like that, but Mizzou is going to have to play at a very different pace than it has in just about any other game this season. Certainly in an SEC play when they're often, you know, pushing 74, 75, 76 possessions in a game. That's relevant. That's going to be, you know, we'll talk about the talent component to this and how that should win out, et cetera. But that's going to be an adjustment for Mizzou. And Mizzou can really only control one half of that variable. We saw this when watching the Vandy game. Part of the reason why I chose that game is that Vanderbilt is like Missouri in that it likes to play a little bit quicker. It likes to do the transition piece, the steal and run down the floor, live ball turnovers, that component. And you know, Drake, that game ended up with more possessions than your average Drake game. But Drake still will just take its time with the ball. It's not going to be rushed. Bulldogs are not going to be rushed from a process standpoint. So the other team can really only do so much to speed it up, because you can really only control the tempo when you have the ball, and that's only about, you know, half the game, right? So that's a frame here. So again, went back to that Vanderbilt game. Drake won that one 81-70 for that win over Vanderbilt. I thought it was a decent game to watch just because it was against an SEC team. You know, we've seen Vanderbilt a couple times play Missouri. So I have a little bit of a frame of reference there. They're a team that, well, you know, talent-wise and seed-wise, worse than Mizzou, did split the series against Mizzou. So it can be a decent frame there. You know, of course, this game happened early in the season, right? Drake has gotten better. Mizzou, you know, should have the talent advantage. But I think it gives us a pretty good trained eye. And I'll give the caveats before I dive into takeaways here. I am far from a basketball genius, so I'm sure there are plenty of things I saw in here that I just missed. There are probably some things I'm going to share with you that might even be wrong. I just I apologize for that. I'm doing my best to figure this out, see what stands out to me. This is a limited sample size. Mizzou's assistant coaches will be and have been watching far more than what I did with this, and watching it far more closely with better stats and all this stuff. This is just sort of my observations from having had the time to sit around and dig through this game and take down some notes. So on to what I noticed. First and foremost, with this team, especially offensively, everything goes through Sturts, the point guard, and I mean everything. Every single possession, he's going to have certainly a touch and control of the ball, if not multiple. A lot of their offensive possessions tend to look like this. It'll be either a five out setup, nobody in the paint, or what basketball call horns, which will be two people kind of at the elbows, or a little above the elbows right there, two bigs. I say that with air quotes that you can't see because they don't really use traditional bigs, but two players there. And the middle third is very much the focus of this offense. Almost everything is going to run through the middle third. You'll notice just right down the lane, between, the sides of the free throw line, right? That's where it's going to be focused. You will see a good amount of ball movement and a lot of cutting, a lot of activity, but it tends to be from side to side or just kind of along the 3-point line. So you'll see, the ball move to the right and then come back to the left, where it'll be a screen set kind of around the elbow, and then somebody comes up from the corner to receive the ball and kind of the wing, and it tends to still stay just behind the 3-point line to keep the ball going into the middle third. You'll see Sturts get rid of the ball, then just kind of loop down towards the basket, come back around the screen, come back up to receive the ball, and they'll reset. So again, ball movements and cutters, but a lot of it is side to side. The goal is to pretty much attack right down Broadway. Sometimes there will be the goal of setting up a short drive from one of the wings, but again, so much just goes right down the middle with this team. There will be a lot of high pick and rolls that you'll see, and they'll start fairly early on in the possession. But this Drake team will just continue resetting and recycling them to get what they want. They'll run a 22 seconds on average. You can actually run a lot of pick and rolls out of that, where run one, it doesn't work, okay, reset, and run another, and you could probably run three or four, right, in some of the spans of these possessions. And it comes back to they're doing this until the defense makes a mistake. But as soon as that mistake happens, it isn't a passive team, right? They'll be patient. They will make the extra pass, but they're not a passive team in that they're going to pass up a defensive mistake. If they get by somebody, they will go to the rim and go up with it. If they get an open three, they will shoot it. If the defense over-rotates and someone is left open, they will make that pass. If someone overcommits on help defense and there's a dump off, they will take that. Especially with Sturts, you can tell he's a player who likes to read. So the goal of this offense, I feel like another one of their overarching principles, is to give Sturts room to not just operate, but to just make reads. He doesn't have, and this shouldn't surprise anybody, he's not the quickest guy in the world. He has enough athleticism to get downhill. But when he's handling the ball in these pick and rolls, it's not a situation where he comes off the screen and is just trying to get downhill, get his shoulder in somebody and attack the matchup. He'll do that sometimes, but mostly he's trying to get enough space to figure out what the defensive coverage is. So if you play drop coverage, he'll hit that floater over you. He'll attack that, or he'll manipulate the angle to try to get a kind of pocket bounce pass to the roller. If you play over aggressive help defense out of these high ball screens, right? He will get downhill to the point to draw the help, and then he will hit that pass. He's a very good passer. He can hit the angles out of all of this. If you switch, which I think is probably the better approach against him, just because it keeps a body on him right away and denies him some of that time, some of that space, he'll reset. They'll run it again if they don't like the coverage, and if he gets a true big man on him, he will happily go to work there. And he has a step back, he has a pull up jumper. He will work to all of that. If he gets the switch, he will go for everything that might come out of those pick and roll looks. And again, even if one is defended well, there could be another one, two, or three on that possession. They will take shots at the rim that aren't the best because they're a smaller team. That even that was the case against Vanderbilt, which was fairly evenly sized with Drake, I would say, across the board. But even seeing this against Bradley, which has a more traditional big, they will go into those shots that aren't the best because they're small. But what you tend to see, because they'll run these actions over and over and reset, they're looking for either something they like, right? A defensive mistake or an action that just works and creates an opportunity, or the shot clock will just be running down to a point where the defense has played well and Drake has to put something up. They've got some shooting, but that can be a desperation three and it'll work. That happened at some of the more backbreaking shots in that Vandy game, were just late shot clock threes that, again, look like heaves, but they went in, and they don't go in all the time. They're not high percentage shots, but they can make them, right? But they will also, late in the shot clock, go down low and go up at the rim and actually and get bailed out with foul calls, right? They're a good foul drawing team. We talked about the free throw rate. They're the 11th best team in the country at getting to the free throw line when in terms of the, the rate of getting there. So some things here for to kind of relate to Mizzou. Mizzou, of course, generally likes to switch its ball screen, switch its actions there, switch one through five, switch everything as much as possible. As long as they can do that one through five and plan to do that one through five, right? Where, you could have the point guard in the center involved in a screen and they're going to switch that matchup. I don't know where Josh Gray fits into this game, Mizzou center Josh Gray. Because, in one sense, on the offensive side for Missouri, having a seven footer with size and weight, he should be great against them. He has, at least 4 inches of height on the tallest player that Drake has, right? You get him a mismatch, and that's even better. He certainly is going to have just an overall size advantage there. But defensively, right, Sturts will work that matchup. If Mizzou switches a pick and roll and you have Josh Gray on an island defending Sturts above the 3-point line, Sturts is going to go to work there. And he's probably just, Josh Gray is a decent defender, but there is just a degree to which the size, it comes into play. He can get blown by, and again, Sturts isn't the most athletic too, but he can get by him there. And then you have your big man facing the wrong way, coming downhill from the top of the 3-point line with your defense in rotation. Like that's not a good defensive setup. That will be exploited because, again, Sturts knows the reads and can make the passes. He doesn't, he's a very acrobatic passer. He has shades of Jakus Jonas from Illinois, who really, just frankly cooks Mizzou in some ways with the passing. That is there with Sturts. He will see the reads. It's a very similar principle to football, where where the help is coming from is sometimes where the ball needs to go, where he can figure out what the rotation is going to be. He'll work that matchup. So it feels to me like there's defensive risk with Josh Gray in there, unless the rim protection can be there or Mizzou wants to change up the coverages, right? Can Josh Gray run drop coverage and handle that well? So that's something there. With or without Josh Gray, I imagine Mizzou will do a fair amount out of ball screens, of where they'll kind of do a quick blitz and quickly double team the ball handler just to have a couple people in their face right out of the screen. And then either one defender drops out of that to go recover and get to the roller, or there'll be a rotation underneath that gets there. There are the pro of that is that, again, you complicate the read and the pass for Sturts. You make his vision messy. You don't give him the space to do that, right? Maybe you can force the turnover out of him, all of that stuff. But that's risky because if there is a window, he can make the pass. He can punish you there. Drake has very good cutters, players who are very good at positioning themselves off ball there. Regardless of any of this stuff, Mizzou cannot bail Drake out with fouls. When Mizzou is rotating as a defense, right? When you have somebody coming down to the box to defend at the rim or help defend at the rim, or somebody is, kind of trying to move in to help cut off a driving angle or slow somebody down, Mizzou fouls a lot in those situations. That's something, the Arkansas game especially, it was just brutal. And even since then, that's something that's been a priority for this team is just not fouling across the board, but especially when rotating and caught off balance. Drake will feast on that. If they set up one of these pick and rolls with 7 seconds left on the shot clock, take their time and get Mizzou rotating, they will go up at the rim with 2 seconds left on the shot clock. It could be great defense, but they might draw the foul there. They just might. This is something to keep an eye on with SEC teams in the tournament. The level of physicality that is the norm in the SEC is not the norm in the MVC. Certainly, I shouldn't pretend, I don't watch the MVC. But there's going to be a degree of physicality coming from these SEC teams that other teams might not be used to, and these games may just look the SEC teams may look more violent as a result in these games that could impact the whistle. It's relevant. It really is. So those fouling mistakes could be costly. This is a game where, again, coming back to the possessions and the pace, you know, every needless foul will be magnified because there will probably be 10 to 12 to 15 fewer possessions than normal in this game. Those will be costly. But every stop that Mizzou can get, right? Every shot clock violation or late heave that doesn't work or late shot at the rim that you know isn't a foul, that doesn't lead to an offensive rebound, those become a lot more important too. This does go both ways, right? Defensively on Drake, they're a team that they pack passing lanes in the inside. So they don't, you know, they play man to man. But they tend to be pretty gentle or you know, lay off some of the perimeter players to try to pack, not really the paint necessarily, but passing lanes, it seems like. Other teams don't do well with getting post-entry passes against Drake and passes in general, especially coming out of the paint. Inside out can be complicated against them because Drake is so good at occupying passing lanes. So Mizzou lately has not been very good at making post-entry passes, whether that's trying to get the ball into Mark Mitchell or Josh Gray or Peyton Marshall or Aiden Shaw or whoever is down there. Those haven't been great lately, and Drake is going to be all over those. So that's going to probably have to prompt an adjustment, or it won't, and maybe that's something that Drake just leans into. The best way to access the paint is going to be driving to get in there. That's something that Mizzou does do very well, right? Mark Mitchell can drive, and he will have a size advantage in this game. He will very likely be bigger than anybody Drake has on the floor at any given time. So the drive should be there too. Someone like Tony Perkins out of the point guard spot, his drives have really been clicking lately. He can do that. Drake tends to defend because they sag off of people a little bit, tend to defend some of these off-ball actions pretty passively. So this to me seems like Caleb Grill could have a little bit easier time of getting loose than usual. Right, so much lately he's just been blanketed by other teams' defenses, even when he's off ball, because they just want to deny him the space to even receive a pass, much less receive a pass and go up and shoot it. Now, of course, this is where I do wonder, you know, what is Drake's adjustment look like for that, right? How do they handle Caleb Grill? Because he has gravity, and other teams, you know, they don't want to lose to Caleb Grill, you know, going 6 for 8 from three or whatever it might be. You know, he's probably going to take more volume. At least he has lately. So if Caleb Grill is able to benefit from that defense to punish them, because he'll move around so much, right? If he can tire them out, tire a player like Sturts out, who's going to play 40 minutes, and find a way to get, it doesn't have to be a lot of space for him. He has a quick release, but doing that before they can identify what he's doing and step up to contest that shot, that will be big. Also, defensively, Sturts can be a little easy to get by. He defends a little flat-footed. They rely on rotations a lot. Again, I think this is sort of his preservation when he's on the floor, because he is playing 40 minutes. That, you know, I just don't know if from an effort standpoint he can afford to play all-out defense for 40 minutes. So I think there do tend to be ways you can get past him. And some of these other Drake players, though, it's strange. There are some possessions where I'd be like, oh, they've got great leverage down low. That's why they're a really good rebounding team. They have a feel for that. And then other times where it feels like they're guessing on the leverage and they just get that wrong. And then the turnover piece, Mizzou just can't have them. There's been some sloppy passing lately, some soft passing lately. That will be punished because Drake will occupy the passing lanes. They defend. It's weird. You know, it is man-to-man, but there are times where it feels like they are defending space more than players, but it's not a zone. So it's really interesting defense. Again, we'll see how much it has to adapt for Missouri and how they choose to play that. But I think it is going to challenge Mizzou to stay out of turnover trouble. And, of course, in offensive fouls to all of that business. So with this in mind, that's kind of the quick scouting report on them. I'm going to give 3 players from Mizzou who need to step up, and then 3 keys to the game, and then we'll call it a preview here. So as far as the players who Mizzou needs to step up, I think number one has to be Mark Mitchell. This team, this coaching staff, has preserved him for this, for the NCAA tournament, for this game, this weekend, all of that, right? And I say this game because this is the most one game at a time that the season is, right? Kept him out of the second half of the Mississippi State game in Nashville at the SEC tournament. He was, you know, certainly it seems able to have played against Florida if they needed him. He wanted to play. Dennis Gates made the call, said, nope, we need you for next week. Sit this one out. We'll see what we can do. That would, you'd certainly assume that with almost a week between games, really, I guess it comes down to a couple hours, right? A couple hours short of a full week to prepare and be healthy, he should be absolutely ready to go for this game. Mizzou's going to need him to go to work. Need Mark Mitchell to use his size down low. Need him to be able to drive, to be able to finish and score and get and ones. All of that at the rim needs to be working, but also he needs to be able to defend well in ball screens. One of the things that opposing coaches have praised Mark Mitchell for at times this season has been how well he's able to work in Mizzou's switch happy defensive system. When Mark Mitchell is at the five, Mizzou can certainly switch 1 through 5 with no issues because he's just more mobile than Josh Gray is. Mark Mitchell is, he's a small ball center, not a traditional center, a true center. So he's going to have to hold up into this. Hold up in that, excuse me, those pick and rolls, because there are going to be so many repetitions with that. And again, every mistake is going to be pounced on. Mizzou's going to need him to hold up in that, well, call out those actions, whatever his role is going to be there, it's going to need to work. In a similar vein, and I talked about him before, Josh Gray is player number two for me here, simply because when he's on the floor, he needs to hold up defensively. He just can't be a liability getting stranded out there. I could see him being someone that Drake tries to exploit and just constantly pull out of the paint so they can, do better down low. In the situations where he is down low, his rim protection needs to be solid. This has to be Josh Gray, the 7-footer who uses his height advantage on everybody else to just block shots and defend well, not Josh Gray who has a height advantage but is getting caught outside coming down and fouling people, right? Again, fouls are going to be magnified here, and they're a way that Drake is going to look to bail out possessions that don't work when they're late in the shot clock, which a lot of these are going to be. That's going to come up. On the offensive end too, it just Mizzou needs him to be a little more productive there. I think it can't be a 4v5, right? It needs to be somewhere where if he gets a size mismatch in the post, they can get the ball to him, which might not be a guarantee. He needs to be able to go to work in that situation. I could see the strategy at this point from Drake being that if he gets the ball in the post, they're happy to foul him because Josh Gray at the free throw line, even with the lane violations, which make for an incredible bit at this point in the season, right? Not the greatest free throw shooter in the world. The other, actually, the arguably more important thing with Josh Gray on the offensive end, Mizzou likes to run a lot of handoffs out of him, use their centers as a hub, whether that's Josh Gray or that's Mark Mitchell or Peyton Marshall or Aiden Shaw or whoever it might be, out of the elbows up top. He needs to have solid ball security and decision making out of those, just because, again, Drake is going for steals, best steal rate in the nation as a defense. They're going to occupy the passing lanes. They're going to be handsy in there. Can't lead to turnovers there or offensive fouls out of those situations. That was where he drew a flagrant offensive foul to start that Florida game, and that alone led to 5 of those first 10 points that the Gators scored in that game, and that 10-0 run really felt like the difference. So it'll be a big game for Josh Gray schematically on both ends of the floor. And then the player who I think could actually be the most key for Mizzou is Tony Perkins. I mentioned him just a few minutes ago. He looked great in Nashville. He really did. This looked like the Tony Perkins I thought we were going to see all season for Missouri. He was getting downhill, working in the paint, finishing in there, getting to the free throw line. Just looked, like a big point guard, which I think was the vision for him. He's someone who should be able to get down there and post another guard up. He has the post skills and the footwork and the finishing package down there to be able to go to work. I think that could break up Drake's system a little bit. Again, the best way to get the ball in the paint in this game, I think, is going to be driving it there. You're going to be dribbling it there, moving it yourself versus trying to pass it in. That's my hunch based on Drake's system and some of Mizzou's struggles. Tony Perkins can do that. Ant Robinson can too. Tamar Bates can. These Mizzou guards can drive. But the way Tony Perkins has been playing and the size that he has, I think that will be especially important for him. Maybe if he can get the defense to collapse enough, there's enough room for some drive and kick that can free up Caleb Grill three, Jacob Cruz, some of that. That's a different, it's an extension of this, but I think that comes from him being able to get downhill first and foremost. Tony Perkins can be really critical. And then digging in here, based on the scouting report on how Mizzou's played, how Drake has played. Three keys for Mizzou to be able to get the result that it should here, which is beating the Bulldogs. The first one is defensively mixing up pick and roll coverages. There are going to be a lot of possessions in which Drake runs multiple high ball screens where they'll run one and then reset and then reset again. Mizzou needs to, one, know what it's running coverage-wise, whether that's switching or dropping or doubling or blitzing, whatever it's going to be. Mizzou needs to be able to communicate what it's running and execute it well. But I think it's also mixing it up because Bennett Sturts, the Drake point guard, is looking to read the defense out of these, looking to get enough space to read and react and then make that pass or take the shot if it's there. Mizzou needs to complicate that, right? Give him different looks as much as possible. They'll target the defenders they target. They'll use the setups to these screens that they want. But once it's just in a good old-fashioned pick and roll from up top, working down the middle third, that's going to happen over and over. Mizzou needs to be disciplined in that, be all on the same page, and be mixing it up. Try to complicate that as much as they can for Drake. Number two is related to that. Do not foul. Foul trouble will just be make this so much more difficult than it needs to be for Missouri, whether they are rotating, whether they're helping down low, whether they're going in to try to get steals. In a game where there are fewer possessions than a normal game, every foul is going to be magnified. Drake is a good free throw, a good team at getting to the free throw line, at earning free throws. There is just an extent to which they are going to do that. Don't feed into that. Don't help that. That doesn't need to happen in this game. So Mizzou needs to maintain verticality when they're coming over and helping. They've got the size advantage there. Need to be smart when picking the spots to reach in and try to get to the ball. And the rotations, this comes back to the pick and roll coverage, needs to be crisp. You need not just the two players who are brought into the ball screen action. You need all five on the floor to know what's happening, know where they're supposed to be, and execute. And the third key on the offensive end for Missouri is just smarter passing, right? The better move at times is going to be to dribble the ball, whether that's around the outside to get ball screens there or to drive inside and see what opens up or what's there at the rim. But just because there is a passing window does not mean it can't or won't be closed by Drake. They are playing to defend those passing windows and will look to exploit that, look to bait almost other teams into that. Mizzou's had some issues here. Some of these turnovers lately have been poor passing. Just that you can't have that. These mistakes are going to be magnified. It goes back to the bigger picture point of what Drake is trying to accomplish. They are trying to force the other team to make as many mistakes as possible, and then use the slower tempo, use the smaller quantity of possessions that will take place in this game. Use that to magnify those mistakes. That's Drake's MO. If Mizzou can avoid feeding into those mistakes and complicate the reads for a player like Bennett Sturts, talent should win out. That's the show for today. Thank you for taking the time to listen. And again, a huge thank you for being part of our digital subscriber community at stltoday.com. You make all of this work possible, so I do appreciate those of you who support us financially, and hope you have enjoyed the coverage from Nashville. Last week, like I said at the start of the show, headed out to Wichita this week. Plenty of coverage to come from there, covering Mizzou and what SIUE does out there. And if this is a multiple weekend affair for Missouri, then I'll be out in the Bay Area next week. We'll cover this as long as it goes. We'll be back with another Eye on the Tigers episode, perhaps this weekend if Mizzou gets things done versus Drake, and we see a window to preview that game against UNCW or Texas Tech. If not, then next week. We'll talk to you next time on the Eye on the Tigers podcast. Thank you again for listening.